Perky base. Zechor es bor echa.
Remember your creator in your early days. Bimei bachurisecha.
It's the old situation, you know, about youth being wasted on the young.
Ara shelo yavau yemei hara'a v'higiu shanim asher tomar ein li bahem chefetz.
I mean, we've explained the whole book in light of this pasuk a number of times. Right? A day will come where you say, you know, I can't do that anymore. I mean, what makes an enjoyable event memorable and something that you savor is the idea of repeating it, right? But if the extent of your enjoyable event is something which is going to be can't be repeated in your old age, right? You have to leave some enjoyment for old age, right? Right. So what does it mean to remember your maker when you're young? Right? In other words, don't waste youth simply on the things that can only be done in youth. Right? Now, by all means, I don't mean to be a killjoy here. Right? However, I'd like to point you to a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, look at three things and you will never come to do the wrong thing. Da me'ayin batsa, know where you came from. La'ana tabulech, where you're going. And who are you going to stand before in the future and have to defend your life? So all three come from these three words. You see the word uzachoris bor echa? Okay. So one thing it can mean is your creator. That's with name imiatot atzilutein din v'cheshbon, in front of whom you are destined to give a cheshbon. Right? Now remember, you came from a be'er, you're going to a bor, right? You came from a womb, which is a well, spring of life. You're going to a pit, and all of them look like this word. Borecha. Borecha in Hebrew means creator, a well, spring, and a pit. All three are in that word.
That's incredible.
Right? So that is a play on words in that Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It's Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph. Okay. All right, time wastes so much. Time is short. There's much to do. You don't know about that. Okay. Important thing is to do these things when they're easy to do, when they're possible to do, when we reach to a state of irreversibility, right? We can't do those things anymore. Okay?
I don't know, I just had more fun as I've gotten older.
It's because you lived a life taking care of these things.
I was miserable in my youth.
Yeah, I'm happier than I'm old.
It's because you have incorporated the wisdom of Kohelas in good time. Mm-hmm. Without even knowing it.
It didn't even hurt.
Right. It hurt to learn this book, but I'm sure. Okay, let's go. Ada shalotech shach ha-shemesh v'ha-or v'ha-yareach v'ha-kochavim v'shavu he'avim achar ha-goshem. I'd like to start talking about a person in Tanakh. If we can analyze this person's life, maybe we'll help ourselves out with these psukim. His name is Barzilai Hagiladi. Ring any bells here?
One people that
David told Shlomo.
Spare or not spare.
Well, he doesn't tell him to spare him. He tells him to take good care of him and to give him chesed and to look after him. Barzilai Gilodi was one of the men who came to David while he was fleeing from Absalom with a lot of food and a lot of provisions. He was a very old man at the time. And David, after he was victorious against Absalom, offered him to return to and live in the palace with him. So Barzilai's refusal was based on the fact that I am too old, I can't enjoy life anymore because I can't taste, I can't smell, my senses don't work well. So what good is my life for me if my senses don't work well? Wow. Is that all old age is? It's just that you're losing your sensuality and is that what it is?
I hope not.
I certainly do.
But, you know, if your mind grows, your wisdom grows, your soul grows.
Precisely the point. If all of youth was lived for the senses, then beware of old age. Right? But if youth is lived in incorporating other desires and desirable things in this existence, then by all means, some of those things can be enhanced in old age. Okay, but, you know, they set you out to pasture in many, many different occupations at various ages, right? I use again my father as an example. The lens is inside. The other one is in there. Oh,
he can't see.
My father worked as an engineer in an old age home, and in an old dock in an old age home. He reached a certain age, and that's it. You know, they already want to put you out the pasture, as they say. Okay, so the Gemara at the end of Maseches Kiddushin says that in the world of Torah, they'll appreciate you. As you get older, they'll appreciate you more. And I'm not so sure that that's true also. They send lots of rebbeim out to pasture also for younger, more dynamic teachers now also, right? Mm-hmm. So in what way are we, what can we say gives us more respect as we get older?
You're supposed to know more.
And have experience and...
Not experience, no.
No more.
No.
The College of Life.
College of Learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, at this point, what this book is trying to convince us is to lead a life that is analyzed, that doesn't take anything for granted, it doesn't take quick answers, right? It doesn't take any shortcuts, and try to engage in the things that will be enhanced in old age. If you say you're happier now, you're getting happier and happier as the years go on, right? Now there's different considerations here, you know, different things that you've put in the world and that you can look back at and things like that. Those help a lot too. But you have lived, you have certainly incorporated Kohelis. That's a great gift. Okay. All right. So but what is this Pasuk Beis about the clouds and the wind, you know, and the rain and the sun? Okay. I'm sorry. Exactly, or metaphors for that day, idioms for that day, right? Usually clouds disappear after rain, right? It says, before the darkness comes, right? Hashemesh ve'orba yareach ve'kochavim, and all these things that go from darkness to light, back to darkness to light, right? There will be troubles that abound in old age, these things are harder, times are changing, people want you to change. Right, Kohelis wants to make the aging process easier.
Yeah.
Okay, Ibn Ezra says this is all a process about the aging of the guf and of the nefesh of the neshama. The guf, sorry to say, it's obvious that someone who's 80 is not going to be able to run the mile as fast as someone who's 30 or 20. In some sports, you're over the hill at 25, 27, 30 already. Right. So the guf will be worn down with age. There's no question about it. We just came from a woman who's 101, and she really aged a lot in the last year. I mean, she was great a year ago, and now she really, really aged a lot. But the nefesh, the neshama, her neshama remained pure all this time. Really a beautiful neshama all this time. Now, again, there are all sorts of curveballs that God can throw us. All sorts of curveballs we're not prepared with. I've seen a 40-year-old man suffer from Alzheimer's, and I see a 100-year-old woman who's clear and crisp, just practically to the very end. Right? So all those curveballs, that we can't do anything about. But what we can do is, all things equal,
By the way, the studies show that there are some things you could do about that. I told you about that study with those 600 nuns or something living in
puzzles.
Those tents,
yes,
right?
The
puzzles and the more elaborate thinking. In other words, what that study wants to show you is that it's not only important to stay in shape and go on the treadmills once in a while for the sake of your arms and feet, but it's important to keep the brain in shape, to keep the exercising the head. Because that can get a little atrophied also, right?
Was that the study that showed there was more, you find more incidence of Alzheimer's?
Significantly more in the people who did less thinking and wrote less elaborate sentences when they were younger.
Oh, it could be cause and effect. Those that don't have Alzheimer's are predisposed to
it could. Yeah, it could be that something has manifested itself very early on. Okay, and the wind, the clouds come even after the rain. Usually when the rain is over, the clouds dissipate and the sun is supposed to shine. But be careful, because the time will come where after it rains, the clouds stay. Right? The arthritis sets in and other things, and we have to do all we can to forestall that.
I think Thomas right now is talking about sight, about your vision.
I think it means to have all the senses, but the word chazu is coming in soon, if you actually keep soaking. But I think we're talking about all the senses here. That's why I brought in Barzillai HaGiladi, who tells David specifically, I can't taste, I can't smell, I can't hear, I can't this and that. So what good is that? Those things do tend to get weaker as we get older, right? Although, now they're working, they're doing these things with the eyes that are amazing. Those things tend to get weaker. Hey, Steve, you have a question?
Yeah, the translation here is return after the rain, after the Shavuot. So it seems different than just a cloud stain after rain. It actually, I happen to come back if they're already there. Yeah,
it clears it.
So it clears and then they return. And then it rain again. Martin Tynes talks all about that for predicting rain in Israel. But, Okay, so let's read around a little bit. Let's start from the back there. Is that... you want to, Robert? Would you like to start with pasuk Gimel? Gimel 3.
Mm-hmm.
This pasuk is brilliant. This pasuk refers to two things that tend to give us a lot of trouble in old age. I mean, it's very clear what the end of this book is about. Can you make out what two things first of all, as long as we interpret the Shomrei Habayis, the Habayis is our body, right?
Yeah.
The guardian of the house. A day will come, B'yom Shiazu, what's Yazu? He probably observed people with Parkinson's. They're starting to tremble. That what you have for your zoo, tremble?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So a time will come where the house is going to start to tremble. There's an earthquake in this goof. Besides Suan Shechoyel, right? Even the mighty ones will walk over bent over. Right? Because he can't protect himself anymore. Remember Yaakov in his youth? He turned that big rock over that right. A whole bunch of the people couldn't turn over. He did it himself.
Then.
And he impressed Rachel with that. And in his old age, when Yosef was, he was told that Yosef is coming, he had to make such an effort just to pick himself up.
What about the
Rav? That, you can say, was one of those curveballs that we said. The Rav was stricken with very, 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 very serious Parkinson's and Alzheimer's after his apparently. I mean, it's a very touching story that one time his daughter was so devoted to him and waited on him hand and foot at the end. And he told her, I don't know who you are, but I can tell by how you're devoted to me that you must be the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. Okay, so he says, Uvotlu ha-tochanos. And the tochanos don't work anymore. Now, today we've helped this situation quite a bit today.
False teeth.
Yeah, we have false teeth today. We've got all kinds of work that can be done.
Implants.
You can clear out the cavities. But then you've basically lost your teeth. usually, you know. And remind yourself also that the life expectancy then was barely over 50. No king, hardly any king of Israel lived into his 60s. I mean, David is a giant at 70, right? You know, I know we have these very old ages early on in the Torah, but it was more realistic in the time of, once you get to the kings. Shlomo dies at 52, Shmuel dies at 52, you know.
The most common cause of death prior to the modern times was tooth decay.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Tooth decay.
Because of that infection or what?
Yeah. Abscess. Sepsis.
Okay.
Is that incredible?
So it's incredible that Shlomo should spend all this much time working on the grinders, because he knows that this. And what's very interesting is that Shir HaShirim begins with great praise over the beauty of teeth.
Yeah.
Straight teeth and then white teeth. Because at that time, everyone's going to be with two teeth in their mouth. Usually you get to be 50. I mean, how can you have more than two? Four teeth, seven teeth maybe. So, I'm serious. I just got a call from my dentist.
Nobody's got a history of toothbrushing.
Yeah, exactly. It should be something like that. And Discovery Channel does everything. I wonder if they have something.
Yeah.
So he says that
in public health, dentistry is the single most important.
Interesting.
Well, in history, that was just a decade ago. Now, that was a very, very serious problem. In Israel, there was almost no preventative dentistry in Israel until about a decade ago.
Really?
People had really serious problems. But it wasn't seen as a prayer, as a health prayer.
Okay. I mean, I spoke about dentistry here in Shul a few weeks ago. We had a bar mitzvah from Jacobson. You know, he's a dentist, Mark Jacobson. Anyway, he says... That they lose their effectiveness, those grinders, and you have to be careful because that's going to cause all sorts of problems, as Arthur just mentioned. Okay, and pasuk dalel haros parvos means that the eyes also start to fail. Okay, right. Let's do dalel. Kathy, would you like to read dalel? The sugru d'lasayim. Okay, what sense is this pasuk talking about? What doors are being closed in the marketplace?
Famine?
I don't know. What the marketplace, if there's a busy marketplace in the senses, what would you think that would be? That has doors in front of it?
Shut your eyes.
The doors in the street.
How do you say the bear tails in the Torah? Lo teilech rochil v'amecha. It's called a rochil because a gossiper is a merchant. A rochil is a merchant, right? Rochilus. Right, so the marketplace is a mouth. That's where all the merchandise is being all the wares. And there's a door in front of it. Okay, the sugud l'asayim bashuk means that the teeth not only were not going to be able to, this is the bishval called hatachano, not only will the teeth not be able to do its chewing, it won't even be able to do its talking. You have trouble doing the talking here. Yakum l'kol ha-tipor v'yishachu kol b'nos hashir. Right?
It's actually a serious social problem in the United States. People with horrible tooth decay, bad teeth. Can't get jobs.
I know someone just like that. I think didn't I tell you this last week? I knew somebody. He was looking for a job. He had no teeth in his mouth. I arranged for him to get teeth, like a little, you know, some kind of bite, you know, at least to get a job, indeed. And then he said he was someone who's not Jewish even. He said he was in a Kentucky Fried Chicken. He took it out and put it in the thing and he threw the whole thing out.
Great.
And he forgot, he threw the whole thing out. Then they went back to the store, he looked at the garbage, he couldn't find his teeth.
Have you chicken without teeth? I don't know,
he took it out, he said, I don't know.
Counterintuitive.
Yeah.
That's why
he lost his mind also, I guess. So.
The interesting here is, I think, the diptych, sugru, pu'al, you don't see very often.
Yeah, but it's done to him.
Sugru.
Right? Taken against his will. There's nothing more to say. He has nothing to say. He has nothing to eat and nothing to say.
Is this Takana with a
That's with a test. The test. That's with the tachana in the bus station. It's with a tough. There, the tough is not part of the shorish. Chaniya means to rest, to stop. Here, the test is part of it. Tochein means to grind. The grinders aren't working, right? Okay. Now, yikum lekol hatzipor. Usually, you get up when the birds chirp, right? Who gets up? Right. Who gets up when the birds chirp is someone who... There's two ways to understand this. One is that you have such light sleep, mm-hmm. you don't have good sleep, so you get up as soon as you hear a bird chirping. Yishachol kol b'nos hashir. Right? The old person thinks nothing of song and zmiros and loveliness and... You know, nothing... be careful. Nothing will give you any pleasure. And here I wrote, like Barzilai. Can't enjoy life anymore if you don't look out for these things. Okay? Fascinating how much time that Shlomo spends on convincing us to take care of our teeth before so that they'll be able to work when they get older.
He's probably amazing. A dentist as well.
He enjoyed his food.
That's for sure. Okay.
Again, just so he's the observer here, he's describing what happens in all
that. Oh, of course, of course.
And there's a lesson to be, you know, as the body deteriorates, there's a lesson to be learned.
Look, I'm not sure that a book in the Bible has as its main theme a reminder to go to the dentist. I don't think this is here. It's a reminder, in general, to take care of the guf and the nefesh and the neshama, the body and the soul, when it's... I mean, this is the crunch time, is when, you know, today, about when you get to 40 and 50, you got to keep your body a little nimble, you know, you got to get on the treadmill there.
Oh, man, do you ever.
Maybe even run a marathon. Okay, let's do Pasuk Hey. Who was reading? You?
Agami Gavara Yirod, the Chasim Badera, Vienna Tashaked, the Stagel Hakagav, the Tucker Harviana, the Lechadam of Besolomo, the Savud, the Shukasu.
This is a very, very tough person. But I'll try to go one by one. Gam gavo yeru v'chatim baderech means that every small step is gavoha. Any small, even small little things take such an effort, right? Okay, be careful for when these days come, right? V'yonet, there's an extra aleph there. V'yonet means to move. To move out, to burst out, to sprout, right? Like neitzachama, right? The sunrise. Okay. Bioneta shokade. Why the shokade? Because the shokade comes out early. Hashkedi aparachas. The word shokade in Hebrew means to do something quickly. Right, v'yistabel hechogav. Yistabel, the shorish is samach beis lamed. Right, right. It's crazy. I mean, it seems to be a play on word in the word gov. Yistabel hechogav means that the he uses purposely like a caterpillar slash moth kind of animal that changes drastically in the middle of life. Right. Human being also will change drastically like this, unless we take care of ourselves when we have the opportunity. All right? The tofer ha'aviona. Tofer is probably from the lashon parar, peresh resh, means to stop. Ha'aviona. Aviona does not have another word like it in the Tanakh. What's interesting is that it's a very, very famous Talmudic word. Okay? But it means, it comes from the word of ta'avo, although ta'av, although ta'av is spelled with a vav, here it's with a bet.
Like a table?
Yeah, but that's with the vav. Here it's with the bet, but it means Rashi says it means the same thing. Rashi says ta'ava kimo velo avitem ta'avti lishua sechon tehillim ta'avti, which means I had a
a cheshek
for your Yeshua. Okay, so it says mitaferav yona, your cheshek will be lost. You won't have any like Barzilai I just described. Ki olecha adam el beis olamov v'savavu bashuk hasoftim. Everyone is going to their everlasting world. And someday someone will be in their shuk, and they'll have a eulogy. So this is, let me just give you the Shira Katuv, and we're gonna have a strong contrast to this. Mitzvah Shem, we'll go right into Shira Shirim. But someone is going to evaluate our lives in maybe 45 minutes to an hour, right? Maybe two or three people will, maybe four people. If it's Rosh Chodesh, we're gonna get a bum rap, right? Purim, Hanukkah, right? We're not going to have anyone to do anything. People sometimes have called me and he says, Rabbi, I like the way you give eulogies. It's very nice. You don't pour it on, but I don't want one. When it comes time for me, I want you to get up there, say a parakeet tehillim, and tell the audience that I didn't want this. Okay, one person in the show told me this, and I didn't listen to him. His wife would not have liked it. I don't know if he talks about it with her.
It's for the living, not the dead.
It's for both, actually, but yes.
Did she complain to you when you said it?
No, but she also told me something similar, by the way.
And she knew you wouldn't listen.
No, she since then, she told me, listen, I want just a simple little thing. I don't know, the question is, where they are by that time, do they care? You can say, I care now. I care what they're going to say about me in that moment. I care because there are people who might be sitting there who might want to hear the lies they're going to say. Sometimes happens if someone pours it on too thick, then the people in the room start saying, oh, yeah.
On the other hand, if you hear things about people, you just didn't know.
I always say that many times. Is why do we have to wait for the Levaya to learn this about the person? I remember when Rosh Hashanah, I said my uncle Irving had just passed away, and he was like my mother's sister's husband, and sick for a long, long time, and he was Lubavitch. He was the relative. He used to grab me and my brother by the back of our heads and say, "How could you wear tefillin with that this kind of hair on?" He was always checking for tzitzis and all that kind of stuff like that. So he used to, my brother, not Malcolm Klezik from this, but at the funeral there were such amazing stories told of him. He was such a tzaddik, and I said, "How did I not know this about Uncle Irving? Well, I have to wait till the Levaya to find out about Uncle Irving." He's once stopped by a police officer for a ticket, and he saw the guy had a Jewish-sounding name, and he made him put on tefillin. He got the ticket, though. He put on tefillin. There's like 20 stories like this that they said at the Levaya. A bunch of people came to talk about it. So that's one thing. All right. But then, look, if you pour it on too much, then that's not a good thing. The Gemara says you're allowed to just a teensy bit of elaboration. I went with some superlative. She's the greatest mother anyone ever had. I expect to differ. I think my mother is the greatest mother anyone ever had. I don't like her hyperbole and superlatives. I'm not. There's an old joke that the difference between a testimonial and a eulogy is that in the testimonial, at least there's one person in the room who believes what's being said.
I don't think that's why people don't want a eulogy. I think it's a different reason.
Yeah, they're just truly humble, and they said, I just wanted to be simple. I do not want to put those people through all that. No, the guy who told me this, I know, because every time he sits through it, he says, I have to go to the funeral because it's someone I knew, and he's sitting there cringing. I can't listen to this. Anyway, if you make it realistic, right. Look, some of you may be called upon to speak, for someone you're close to. Just make it realistic. Anyway, let's finish this. Al asher lo yerotek. The word is yerotek in Masorah. Okay, we're back to the beginning, sort of the parak.
right? Okay. Chevel HaKesef V'tarutz Gulas HaZahav V'tishaver Kad Al HaMabua V'narotz HaGalgal El HaBor. Why are these psukim so hard?
So the art scroll can give you the truth.
Okay, Rashi really, really takes a lot. He goes to return to the beginning of the parak and does basically what we're doing here and shows how everything is this, the house is this human body. So we want to make sure is in shape when the crunch time comes. So these silver cords of people run after these golden pertinences, okay? Right. So, I mean, the nimshal here is like in Bereishis at the end of Paragimel in the Gan Eden story, is that Hashem gave us a ruach, a spirit. Right, and that ruach is going to be broken one day. It's going to go back to the pit. Right, remember we started this chapter by saying, remember the maker of the pit, the wellspring. Right, and here it's saying that you're going to have to give it back someday. So remember, that I used just a parable in the Talmud about a king who gives out white clothing to every one of his subjects. And he says, I want you to keep this pressed. I want you to have it ready because on a certain day I'm going to call you and I'm going to invite you to a party and I want all of you to be wearing your white clothes when I invite you to this party. The king waits 12 years, 15 years, 18 years. Some of the people decide, I got this beautiful white suit. Why don't I wear it to some of my own parties? And some people wear it to the party. You might get the white suit a little dirty, you get a little ketchup on it, you get a little chocolate sauce. And some people are wearing it, other people take it out once a year and press it to make sure it's ready, just ready exactly when I'm called to wear it. So after 25 years, the king calls everybody in the palace. I want everybody in my palace in 1 hour with the white suits on. Right? There's not enough time to press them and clean these suits. So everyone's coming into the palace, right? Everyone get what the white suit is and what they're being called for. Mm-hmm. This is punching a clock, guys. This is right. Getting, you know, this is kicking the what do you call it, the proverbial bucket. And the people who have their white suits, who kept their white suits in shape, they get to have, you know, they come into the party and the banquet well prepared. The other people are coming in with these tattered suits. They look schlumpy, they look stained. We have a neshama and a guf. Now Nebuch looks, you know, some of us get a bad break, some of us the guf is broke to brachana but we have to do our best. Right? Again, there could be so many bad breaks that not just carelessness walking in the street when the light is red and getting hit by a truck. But I'm talking about, you know, things be totally beyond our control or desire, of course. But we just have to do our best. Right? Let's conclude this book now. Havel Havelim Amar HaKoheles. HaKol Havel. We are like any good book, closing the way we begin. The ending should always bring back something from the beginning. It means that it's not just his name, it's this description of him. The one who gathered people. You see the word kehila here, like by Yakel, this week's parasha? Okay. Right. So here's what Ibn Ezra, I mean, he did this in the beginning of the book also. He says, V'yismach b'tzeri. He says that this is a construct. Better yet, it's havel havalim. You see the words? A construct would actually be hevel havalim. Vanity of vanities. What's your English translation on 8?
Futility.
Futilities. Ibn Ezra disagrees with that. What do you have in there?
Again, futility.
Same? Futility. Ibn Ezra says it means, I mean, this seems to be a departure from pshat. Ibn Ezra is a pashtun. He says that havel is actually a tzivui. You see it? I mean, he is right. The word looks like an imperative in Hebrew. Havel means if you see something that is worthless and futile, havel it. Treat it that way. In other words, the world is filled with futilities, and we make them important. We sit down and watch it on this little screen or whatever else. It's filled the world is filled with vanities, and yet we invest our time and energies in them. Now, again, I don't want to be a killjoy. There is room for some kind of recreation, and there's room for some kind of must everything have a cheshbon? That's what I'm saying. Can you, when you go to the opera, you go to the Metropolitan, or you go to the museum, and you spend a good 3-4 hours looking at beautiful things, right? Can I just do that because I like it? Or should there be something deep down in my head that says I'm doing this, which I enjoy very much? Remember, we went to the concert together. I had such a great time there, right? Even though I had to go leave in the middle, if you recall, I was doing a shiur. But I remember seeing what a great time you were having, and that was inspiring to me. I feel a better person because I feel these things enhance my mood, and I'll be a better person to my neighbor because of that. You know what I'm saying? I read this in Shulvis Pes Shabbos. The Rambam says if you are in a depressed mood, that what you should do is walk around beautiful trees, walk near a beautiful building, smell beautiful aromas that you enjoy, listen to music that you enjoy, look at art. I mean, amazing Rambam. He says this in his introduction to his Parish to Pirkei Avos, right? And he, you know, he just says because those things, you don't have to every moment you look at a beautiful painting and say, "Wow, I see God in that painting." Although that's what I read right afterwards. You read Rav Kook. Remember, I read Rav Kook, who said that the light of the days of creation were found in Rembrandt, right? It's an amazing statement for the Chief Rabbi of Israel. But he's saying here that find all these things, and those things are not hevel. But if something is worthless, by all means treat it that way. Nivze be'inav nimas, it says in Tehillim. If something is a bizayon, treat it that way, please. Right? Today we make sweets bitter and bitter sweet. V'yoser sh'aya koheles chacham. Right, see, more than the fact that he was chacham, odli man da'ase sa'am v'izein v'chiker tikein misholim harbei. There's much more to chachma than just acquiring knowledge, Koheles is telling us. This is obvious. Okay, one thing is you have to be able to teach others. Now, there are very many different types of chachma. Again, you have some people who are chachamim, but they, Unabomber, I think, was a very brilliant person. Right, a very high IQ. What was preventing this man from realizing that what you're doing is wrong? Right? There are different types of intelligence quotients. Right? So at the same time, it would appear from this part of the book that the greatest intelligence is to use your smarts to just be to get along.
Is this talking in third person now?
Is this still what's saying? Yeah, he's saying all the things that I've done, and this may be even a reference to Sefer Mishlei. The author of this book has increased and tried to enhance the wisdom of others, and that's what you have to be. You have to be a social creature, right? Yeah, we can spend all our time enhancing knowledge and making a little money on the side, and be very very wise, but that's not the chachma we're looking for here. Okay, bikesh koheles limtzo divrei chefetz v'chasuv. You know, I broke the cycle here. Maybe we'll go back to Steve. I'm going to read Yud.
Bikesh koheles limtzo divrei chefetz v'chasuv yosher
divrei. Divrei chefetz would be all the things of this book, right? I'm trying to find the things that people should want. You know, the various lessons we've done in this book. Right? So what would be the Kosuv Yosher Divrei Emes? You know, Ksuvim Ha'uskim Bahan Haga Yishara. How to be a person who's in Yashrus. Okay? Now, just parenthetically, that Nitziv wrote in his introduction to Sefer Bereishis that the best way to refer to a person is not Tzaddik, not even Chosid, Yashar.
Yashrus. Nitziv. Nitziv is an introduction to Bereishis. If you want, I'll give it to you. Parshas Bereishis, I always make hundreds of copies for the whole show. It's an amazing introduction. He says, here in Europe, we have such righteous Rashi Yeshiva who speak against anyone else who doesn't share their opinions, and they don't have any tolerance for others, he's very, very harsh with people who are like this. And they say, look, in Sefer Bereishis, Avraham was called the Yashar. Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer Yashar because of the Avos, even though they had stark differences with others, the Avraham still prayed for Sodom, he still prayed for Abimelech, and things like that. So we should learn their lessons. So he says, this is what I'm looking for. And now we conclude the book.
Rabbi Shasa, how would you specifically translate the verb then, Yosha?
Chasuv Yosha?
Yeah.
The things I write that try to get people to live a life of I would say, tolerance, middle of the road. Remember, he blunted 7 times in this book the strictures of all the problems of life by saying, but please be happy, get married, enjoy life, you can't get lost on these things, you can't lose hope for these things. I'm just asking you to analyze them and don't take free rides. There was a free ride that Bnei Israel tried to take by making an ego. Remember I started Friday night, Ochein ki adam timusun ukeachad hasarim tipolu. Right, Bnei Israel wanted the free ride by just looking at this egel and finding God that way. Excuse me, God is an idea. God is supposed to be an intangible. You have to work at that. Sartre, very famous treatise by Jean-Paul Sartre about the revolution of the Jews to put God as an idea and not as something physical. He says that, I mean, this is clear. Monotheism is not our biggest. Gift to the world. There were monotheistic nations before Abraham. Right? I presume from the Torah that Noah and Enoch was a monotheist. But anyway, but the idea of not representing God with anything, that was a big one. So the ego was like a shortcut. And so too was Chava, by Adam and Chava just thinking, let's eat from this tree, and we'll have everything, we'll reach the pinnacle, the Yisim Kelohim, Yodim Tovara. Ani amarti Elohim atem, uvnei elyon kulchem. I wanted you to be like God, right? But you wanted the shortcut just by eating from the tree. Nochein ki adam tamusin chacharasim tipolo. Hasirim tipolo. The Gemara says it refers to the Gan Eden and the ego. Mm. If not the ego, we would have again had that potential to be like Elohim, uvnei elyon. But alas, you didn't meet the challenge. You wanted the shortcut. I once heard a drash that the shortcut is like, he said, you cut the corners. Like a dalet goes to the corner, and you cut the corner and make it a resh. Mm-hmm. That's why Hashem told Moshe, lech raid. Go down from this mountain, because you have to teach them not to cut corners. And that's why in the Garden of Eden, what was their punishment for they were supposed to have everything come easy to them. Instead, coats the dardar. That's miach lach. A double reminder of their effort to cut corners, right? Coats the dardar. It's interesting because I'll say that the fruit they ate was the pre-ate hadar. Right? I'm going to stop. Right, I have others if you want. Okay. Divrei Chachamim kador banos. Anyway. So it says, Pasuk Yud Aleph and Pasuk Yud Beis is fascinating, is used in a medrash to teach a canonization point that there are 24 books of Tanakh, which is fascinating considering the fact that Kohelet is one of those 5 books that the rabbis thought was not part of Tanakh. Right, that's okay, a non-canonical book could also tell me information about canonization, why not? But here is the drasha. The words of all these wise men of the Bible are like dorbanos. Dorbanos is like something you put on an animal's head to keep it from plowing in a it stays in one straight line. Blinders, they call it. Dorban, I think, is a modern Hebrew word meaning like a screw or a nail or something.
No, but the opposite. Dorban.
Oh, that's in Yiddish. Yeah.
That's the German. Kemas meros, that's certainly a modern Hebrew word meaning a nail, right? Masmer. But notice it's spelled with a sin. So the Medrash says that it's spelled with a sin to teach that it's like kemishmarot. There are 24 mishmarot in the Beis Hamikdash. So there are 24 books in the Tanakh. Nituim balei asupos, all planted firmly by the Anshe Knesset HaGedola. Balei asupos means asefa, meaning gathering. Nitznu miro echad, but they all come from the same author. They all must be divine from God. Mm-hmm. Different inputs by different people, but they all have their source in divinity. But be careful, my son. Be careful. Do not add any more books than the 24. Because then there is no end to what you'll add. So, according to the Midbar Rabbah, this is a warning predicting the New Testament and the Apocrypha. Saying, do not add any books. Once these 24 are closed, do not add any more. There will be attempts to add. Do not. Okay?
Well, who is the son
he's referring to? Who's the?
Son.
Oh, my son? I mean, is he the king to his son? It's not the.
Which one?
Not God to his son, that's for sure. Alright, so these two psukim therefore become a very interesting warning about adding on too much. So what does it have to do with Koheles, though? Couldn't this message be put into any book of the Bible? Why Koheles?
Because Koheles keeps on veering between this side, that side, this side, that side. Maybe basically what he's saying is,
let me just qualify what you're saying, because it's so correct. The introduction of the Das Mikra comments, I'm sorry to interrupt you, I'm going to come right back to you, says that one of the reasons why Koheles was meant to be kept out of the Bible is because what's the word that we say with politicians? He articulates and he waffles and he goes from one place to another. And what make up your mind? Is Kaas a good thing or a bad thing? Is Simcha a good thing or a bad thing? Or is there something above the sun, below the sun? Well, make up your mind. So now finish what you were saying, Glenn. But what the Gemara does is that it says it's a prophetic book, and it behooves us to explain, try to use Midiyukim as much as possible in the Pesukim themselves, but to explain when, you know, take out your brisker thumb and say Kaas like this is a bad thing. Kaas like this may be a good thing. Simcha like that is a bad thing. Simcha like this is a good thing. So what I said about women in this place is that. What I said about women in this place is this. There's so many contradictions. The introduction of the Das Mikra, the Masada of Cook, he lists a whole host, pages and pages of contradictions in this book. And how, you know, that the reason why we kept it in the Bible is because we resolved those contradictions. We said that life is filled with contradictions. A politician, or really, if a politician waffles, at least be realistic about it. Be true about it. You know, if Hillary Clinton wants to say now she was always a Martin Luther King girl, she has to explain why she said in 2000 that she was a Barry Goldwater girl at the same time, same year. Barry Goldwater was, tragically, it would hurt him, was very much against the Civil Rights Act. He was one of only, I think, six or seven Republicans voted against it. So you can't say that you were brag to one audience that you were Barry Goldwater boy girl, right? And really try to get a lot of capital out of that. And then at the same time say, at the same year that I was now talking in Selma, I was so enthralled by, you couldn't be enthralled by both Barry Goldwater and Martin Luther King in 1964. I'm sorry. There was no room for it. So, okay, I'm not going to hold, she was what, 1920 at the time. I'm not going to hold, you can change your mind. But don't waffle and have it both ways. That's what waffling is. You change your mind and say, you know, it's perfectly legitimate to change your mind. We have to accept that from politicians. Now, I don't like a politician that panders, speaks to an Arab audience on Tuesday night and says how bad Israel is, and then speaks to a Jewish audience on Wednesday night and speaks how bad the Arabs are, and that politicians have done that.
That's on the same day as the Solutions.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's the same day as Solutions.
Okay. So, I mean, it's just...
Sorry, I just want to hear the person you don't want
it's,
to say.
It's the oldest profession. I mean, that's all I'm saying. Tied for the oldest profession.
Okay, so let's finish. Sof davar hakol nishma eser Elokim yira. This is the pasuk why the book got this day. Because when all is said and done, we will have hakol nishma, all not totally understood, but we'll hear it. Eser Elokim yira. If all is said and done, we have to have a fear of God. This mitzvah sof shmor ki ze kol ha'adam. Now, why this isn't the last pasuk, we'll have to see in a minute. But in the very end, you have to remember that we have to have the wisdom to see the end of things, even if we're not there yet. What do I mean? This is the chachma of Moshe seeing God's back. You couldn't see God's face, because that would be saying a pasuk like this at the beginning of this book. How could I, at the beginning of this book, say, oh, well, sof davar kol nishma? Right? In the end, everything will be, you'll have your answers. I'm going to tell you that. The person is suffering now. Right? All I can tell you is that God has a face that we can't see. If we'd see the face, it would overtax us to the point that our brain would not be able to function and cause oxygen to flow in the bloodstream. We just shut down. The computer would shut down. Because the brain, which only uses about 3 to 5% to think, right, needs just a few percentage points to run blood and do the command system. Right? If the brain would be overtaxed with the thinking, there would be no more room. It would be a short circuit, right? There would be more room for the other stuff. But we can see the back of God. We can understand Eov based on what happens at the end of Eov. Moshe wrote that book. Okay? We can try to understand Koheles and the vicissitudes of life based on an explanation that there is an answer. I don't know it. I don't think anyone on earth knows it. But God has some kind of chesed. There's a big picture someplace, right? And on that, the Medrash says, "Vayara Elokim es kol asher asah v'hinei tov me'od." What does the Medrash says? Me'od. What's so more extra good? Misa. Death. What did God create? Death. That was good. Because tov acharis davar mereshiso. Remember that. Remember the parable about the ship I told a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Tov acharis davar mereshiso. What does that mean? You see, the word ma'od is made up of three letters that refer to three different times in history. But I would rather spell it a different way. Adam represents Adam, the first man. David, right in the middle, in his line to Mashiach. Adam, David, Mashiach. Feel it? What mem does, what the word ma'od does, it takes the beginning and puts the ending in the front. See, it takes the mem at the end of Adam and puts it in the beginning of the word. Ma'od. You feel it? And what it tells us is that it would almost be heretical to say that I assume that it would be out of line to tell a person, you know, I'm gonna explain it to you right now as if though we're looking at the back of God. It's obnoxious to do it, and it's possibly it's unrealistic to think it. But the sof davar means that it's there. It's there. There's a big picture out there, and the best thing we can do is to try to have a good disposition, take care of the grinders. You know what I'm saying? Make sure that the senses, take care of the senses that they work for you, right? Have things to look forward to as such. And in the end, that's what man is all about. But then he's not satisfied with that. He says, "Ki es kol maaseh Elokim yavi b'mishpat al kol ne'olam im tov v'imra." In order to explain why the pasuk, the sefer, has to end like this with the word ra, what a way to end the book! The Masorah tells us to do what when we read this parak. Remember, repeat the next pasuk again. Right, sof davar. There are four books that do this, right? And we read all four of them publicly. Hashiveinu Hashem Elokeinu v'neshuvah chadesh meni tekedem. There's not a pasuk afterwards that's bad. The Yomi dechodesh b'chadshav haftoras rosh chodesh Shabbos Yishayahu. Hinei nochi sholech lachem etz Eliyahu Hanavi l'knei bo yovein Hashem u'kodov anara. Malachi ends with a haftorah of Shabbos HaGadol a few weeks from now. Malachi ends on a bad note, then you go back and read. So those four books. And the explanation, I think, is as follows. Koheles stresses the fear of God. The book we're going to start learning next week stresses the love of God. Shir Shirim. Now, intuitively, I think that we probably feel we'd rather love than fear, right? Positive commandments inculcate love, negative commandments inculcate fear. I like to stress the positive, right? And we have an intuition that to serve God out of love is a higher form of service. In fact, that's how the Rambam explains the Mishnah. Do not serve God expecting reward. Serve Him out of love. Right? And, so it says, serve God without expectation of reward. That's serving God out of love. Right? So in essence, the Rambam understands that the Mishnah to be saying, don't serve God out of fear, serve God out of love. Can anyone tell me how the Mishnah ends? It's a famous question on the Rambam. He says, you in essence are explaining the Mishnah saying, serve God out of fear, I'm sorry, don't serve God out of fear, serve God out of love, but serve God out of fear. Right? In the beginning of next Monday night, I will give you a presentation of some very interesting opinions that appear, especially in the Rambam, about what it means to fear God and what it means to love God. Because in some places, the Rambam, for instance, in the Hilchos Yesodei Torah, says that the fear of God is the highest form of intellectual capacity that a person can come to. Perek Hei Hilchos Yesodei Torah. Perek Tes Hilchos Teshuva, the Rambam says, the fear of God is for fools and children. To keep them in line.
There are two kinds of fears.
We'll have to split the difference here. Otherwise the Rambam may not get canonized. We'll have to explain what were the different types of fears. Okay? There's fear, there's awe, there's different kinds of fear. There's terror even. Okay, so we'll continue that Mitzvah Shem next week, and we're gonna make a segue from the fear of Kohelet to the love of Shira Shira. Okay? Go ahead, everybody.
Nice.
Big here.